Guten Morgen, ich habe die Ehre, die Zusammenfassung vorzustellen. Wie Sie bereits wissen, einige Workshop-Teilnehmer wurden in Gruppen aufgeteilt und einzelne Gruppen haben entsprechend ihre Ergebnisse gestern Abend noch präsentiert. Und ich werde mich kurz fassen und die Zusammenfassung vorstellen. Also es ging um folgenden Fall. Es waren vier Frauen aus voraussichtlich Osteuropa identifiziert worden, die in einer großen Gruppe in einer kleinen Wohnung gehaust haben. Denen wurden die Identifizierungsdokumente abgenommen. Sie hatten kein Recht, ohne Erlaubnis sich fortzubewegen und wurden von sogenannten Taxifahrern, die ebenfalls in dieser Behausung mitwohnten, zu den Kunden gefahren. Diese vier Personen durften sich die Kunden nicht aussuchen, das waren die sexuellen Dienstleistungen, und sie durften auch nicht bestimmen, welche Leistungen sie erbringen durften. Und nun geht es letztendlich um die Verurteilung der Täter und um die Zeugenaussagen dieser vier Frauen. Und es gab vier Gruppen insgesamt im Workshop, Polizeigruppe, Staatsanwaltschaftsgruppe, Opferschutz und Richter. Polizei war die Gruppe, die ich als erstes präsentieren möchte. Ich habe ein paar Stichworte mir aufgeschrieben. Also die Polizeigruppe hat sich Gedanken darüber gemacht, wie die Vernehmung ablaufen soll, und sie haben sich darauf geeinigt, dass die Vernehmung in einem kleinen Raum abzulaufen hätte, wo die Frauen nicht gestört werden durften durch Telefonanrufe etc. Sie haben sich auch Gedanken darüber gemacht, wie lang diese Vernehmung dauern sollte, und es ist darauf geeinigt, dass sie kurz ausfallen soll, weil die Betroffenen nicht tatspezifisch befragt werden dürfen in dem ersten Gespräch, um sie nicht erneut zu traumatisieren. In diesem Gespräch ist das Ziel, nach der Auffassung der Polizeigruppe, möglichst viele Informationen zu bekommen, aber dabei zu vermeiden, deliktspezifische Fragen zu stellen. Und die Gruppe hat sich noch Gedanken darüber gemacht, welche Recherche durchgeführt werden sollte, um die Frauen zu identifizieren, weil, wie bereits erwähnt, die Frauen sich nicht ausweisen konnten. Und die Gruppe hat sich über Internetrecherche geeinigt, dass nach einer Bilderrecherche durchzuführen wäre, obwohl sie der Auffassung waren, dass meistens die Frauen so geschminkt abgebildet werden, dass sie kaum zu erkennen sind, dennoch bestehen die Möglichkeiten, diese Frauen vielleicht anhand der auszuführenden Leistungen, sei es ungeschütztes Geschlechtsverkehr oder Analverkehr, anhand der Leistungen zu identifizieren und anhand der Eindrücke, die die Person ungeschminkt auch hinterlassen. Also die Bildersuche ist darauf lag Hauptaugenmerk. Und jetzt würde ich gerne zur weiteren Gruppe was berichten, und zwar Staatsanwaltsgruppe. Sie haben sich zunächst einmal überlegt, die Opferaussagen in Frage zu stellen, weil die Opfer nicht versucht hatten zu entkommen. Und das war eine Überlegung, und dann wurde das aber widerlegt, und die Gruppe hat Vorgehen vorgestellt, währenddessen die Frauen sensibel zu befragen waren, dass sie Recht bekommen sollten, die medizinische Unterstützung zu bekommen, auch wenn die Kinder involviert waren, dass den Frauen ermöglicht werden sollte, in sichere Unterkunft umzuziehen, zu verbleiben mit ihren Kindern, also quasi Familienzusammenführung anzustreben. Und darüber hinaus, um die sekundäre auch, wie nennt sich das, Traumatisierung zu vermeiden, dass die Aussage der Zeuginnen aufgenommen werden soll und diese Videoaufzeichnung dann während des Verfahrens abgespielt werden soll. Das Ziel ist es, dass die Opfer mit den Tätern nicht in Kontakt treten, um diese also Traumatisierung abzuwenden. So, dann genau, das sind hoffentlich die Hauptschwerpunkte, die aufgezählt worden sind, und Sie werden dann noch Fazit vorstellen. Also zum Opferschutz, Richter habe ich jetzt als nächstes. Also die Richter haben sich darauf geeinigt, das war eine relativ kleine Gruppe, dass ich kann mich nicht erinnern, ob sie sich festgelegt haben, ob das Zuhälterei oder Menschenhandel gewesen ist. Ich glaube, die Menschenhandel, okay. Also die Gruppe hat sich auf Menschenhandel geeinigt, dass die Täter gemäß diesem Delikt dann zur Verantwortung gezogen werden müssen. Und diese Gruppe hat sich aber über die Taxifahrer auch Gedanken gemacht und sich gefragt, sollen sie als Mittäter oder als Zeugen auftreten. Und dann haben wir uns das Ergebnis angehört, dass sie als Mittäter vor Gericht gestellt werden sollten. Ich hoffe, ich irre mich nicht. Ach so, sie waren sich nicht einig. Okay, gut. Und zum Opferschutz ist noch vorzutragen, dass man sich über Dolmetscher noch Gedanken gemacht hat, welche Sprachkenntnisse müssen vorhanden sein, ob das Native Speaker sein sollen, also die fließend die jeweilige Sprache sprechen. Und im Vordergrund hat man dann Gedanken gestellt, dass solche Dolmetscher sein sollen, zu denen sowohl die Polizei als auch die Opfer Vertrauen haben. Und sie haben sich noch gefragt, ob Geschlecht hier eine Rolle spielen könnte, ob die männlichen Dolmetscher auch herangezogen werden dürfen oder aufgrund der Traumatisierung und Schilderung der Taten vielleicht den Frauen es ermöglicht werden sollte, dass weibliche Dolmetscher beteiligt sind. So, die psychologische Unterstützung ist notwendig nach der Auffassung der Gruppe. Und medizinische Hilfe, Gratisunterricht für Kinder, Recht auf Entschädigung und falls die Frauen sich entscheiden sollten, in Österreich zu verbleiben, dass sie umziehen und in andere Städte untergebracht werden, als die Täter aktiv waren oder sie selbst diese Dienstleistungen erbracht haben. Ich hoffe, das reicht als Zusammenfassung. Vielen Dank.
Good morning, everyone. It seems neither of the seminar leaders are here today, so I try to summarize the seminar on JIT a bit. And I attended it along with some colleagues from Malta and other countries. And it was, for me, I've never had a JIT, so it was very, very fruitful to attend the seminar. And Tatiana and Joanna from Eurojust, they divided us into three groups. And we each group represented a country. It was Romania, North Macedonia, and Austria. And we were placed in different areas of the room. We were given a case It was the same case, but from different angles, from the information that each country had. So it was very interesting. And I was in the Austrian group, so we got information. We got an European investigation order from Romania with different actions that they wanted us to take. It seems like there had been some transactions from well-known Romanian criminal to a bank account in Austria, and they wanted us to identify the person who was the account holder, and they wanted bank statements of that account. They also had indications that people, a lot of people, were trafficked from Romania to Austria to work during forced labor in a farm in Austria. So they also wanted information about whether this person, the account holder, owned in some kind of agricultural establishment or anything. And they also wanted us to search the farm. So we started out by identifying these questions and answering them. We got this in the case, so we could provide them with information. We were also summoned, called to a coordination meeting at the Eurojust. So one of us per group was assigned to present the information we had from the Austrian side on the coordination meeting, and another person was assigned to pose questions from the Austrian investigation to the other countries. And then we had a faked coordination meeting where Rana, who is, as I understand it, usually chairing these meetings, she was chairing this as well, and we had like a role play where we presented information from each country. We also made a PowerPoint in order to present it. So it was very, very, very good for me to have the practical experience of how does a coordination meeting work. So now I feel much more secure, and I will go home and tell my boss I want a JIT right away. So I think that's for the findings. Thank you.
Thank you, Ramin, and good morning, everyone. I will give a brief summary of the working group on forensic evidence provided by Mr. Deno. He's not here anymore, so he asked me to give the summary to you. Well, it was a very interesting working group with a lot of active participants. It was the working group on forensic tools on THB cases and the case management in these cases. What do you do with forensic evidence, especially with evidence of a digital nature, and what rules of criminal procedure do, if any, apply in these cases? And there was a specific focus on interception, investigative powers on interception. The working group was held in plenary form, so we didn't have any sub-working groups. In a plenary form, and we discussed three exercises provided by Mr. Daly. One on open source intelligence versus online investigations. One on managing digital evidence in cases of human trafficking. And one on the authorization for gathering digital evidence. And in the first exercise, the participants learned the initial and compulsory steps before starting an online search, how to make a safe user account, and how to privately search for information, for instance, about persons of interest without leaving any traces. This was very helpful and insightful to have some suggestions and have some practical suggestions on how to build up an investigation that is dependent from OSINT information. How do you do that without leaving traces behind as an investigator? So it was very interesting and very hands-on. In the second exercise, participants learned how digital evidence is collected, processed, and analyzed using forensic software. Well, same hands-on mentality applied over there. Mr. Dano was very much able to give us an insight on what techniques you can use and what kind of different software is being used by investigators all over Europe. And the third exercise represented an exchange of ideas on national legislation and procedures in the case of a mobile phone found at the house search of a suspect of human trafficking, and in the situation where he is willing to cooperate and not willing to cooperate. And this shed more light on the different rules that apply in our different states when it comes to using data on mobile phones found, for instance, in a house search. A lot of similarities as well, so a lot of similar departing points when it comes to using this evidence, but also some slight differences that gave us more insight in the different situations in the states and the different regimes that apply when using this evidence in concrete THP cases. So we learned a lot about the specific methods investigators can use, especially for me. It was insightful when it comes to OSINT information, the open source intelligence. What can you do? How can you professionalize the OSINT methods that you use as an investigator in order to leave no traces behind? And it was very helpful and, again, very hands-on. In some very helpful working group, and I think that a lot of participants can share with me that we had a lot of appreciation by the enthusiastic way Mr. Damon presented this working group. Thank you.
Thank you,
Randy.
I forgot to ask what you were going to do to summarize, so I had to go into myself. But happy to go into another episode. If this anything that is then obvious to that. So we took a more of a sort of broader approach in our workshop. We shared with each other experiences and sort of like challenges that the participants encounter related to technologies and technologies in their academic trafficking work. And I think to summarize, technology is not the silver bullet. there's a lot of echoes here. So, in fact, there's a lot of applications of tech tools that have been developed to counter human trafficking. And this is for various reasons. So, for example, the organizations like NGOs who develop these tech tools are not well placed to do marketing research.
They develop
So lastly, this is the reintroduction. We prioritize the user needs and technological infrastructure in developing such tools, just to prevent that, you know, we develop a solution to a real problem. Because many of the times these tools are developed without thinking about whether or not the community has made or is an introduction of the algorithm. And then we also discuss the trade-off between data sharing and data privacy and security. Before moving into this, we need to ask what data is what we're talking about. So it is the victim data, essentially. Therefore, the question then becomes, is it necessary to collect a certain type of data? So the agents, investigators, or in the law enforcement organization, when collecting data from victims, we need to also reflect and ask ourselves, what data should we collect from victims? What data should we retain? Because there's always a risk of these data being exposed to their criminals, to their traffickers, and perpetrators, against the victims themselves. We also talk about GDPR, for example, and some of the drawbacks. For example, now with the GDPR in enforcement, law enforcement would then have to apply for a legal permit to access the WHOIS database. So the WHOIS database contains a list of IP addresses, for example, like who would then access which websites and so on. And when law enforcement wanted to have access to this information, then now they have to apply for a new permit, which it takes weeks, instead of just like before GDPR, they can just access it. So these are drawbacks, but they are necessary. Because if we think of from the other side, if these are the victim data, imagine that, you know, for example, we talk about end-to-end encryption, the challenges of accessing WhatsApp or Signal to access these end-to-end encrypted messages, right? What if the key, like someone couldn't access the messages from, for example, law enforcement or policemen, but they are corrupted? So most of the time, we prosecute the very low-level traffickers, the easy, the low-hanging fruits. It cannot just get to the top, to kingpins, or, you know, to those to the higher network, and so on. So there's a danger of, if you have the access, the key to these end-to-end encrypted devices or your apps, software, and that can be misused by someone in the network itself. So let alone the authority of the state, right? It could just be corrupt officials in the investigation process. So again, I think these data security, privacy, and measures are necessary. And we also talked about how to actually effectively use data for analysis or investigation. So I think one potential solution that I mentioned in the workshop also earlier in the presentation is that Microsoft collaborated with Tech Against Trafficking to develop a data preserving mechanisms so that we can depersonalize the data of the victims, but then still make it meaningful enough to analyze, to get the bigger pictures, to analyze the trends of where it's happening, how it's happening, for example. But then of course there are negative consequences to that, because you can always get some meaningful data attributes and then like track it back. For example, as I'm looking around, I think I'm the only Asian person in the room. So if you can refer to this workshop, as I always an Asian lady there, not mentioning my age, my ethnicity, my nationality, actually notify the users. If you would put your email address in this tool, it then lists out all the accounts that have been linked to this email address, your Skype account, WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram. If you have registered these apps with this email address, then you can use it to check your own digital presence to see, okay, including Google reviews, they can see it as well. So these are very open access tools that criminals can also use to avoid their victims and to recruit and target the victims. And I would recommend you as someone working on human trafficking to check it out yourself, you know, right, to see if you are vulnerable online or not. And then finally, I think a lot of time these tech tools do not require high proficiencies in technology. Criminals can easily use them, for example, the encrypted messaging apps. They can use it to communicate with each other. So I think a lot of our workshop participants underestimated themselves. They did not use any tech tools in their work. But we can think of it that, you know, like majority of the criminals, they also are not programmers or, you know, coders or not. So they can just buy some software in the darknet, and then use it to commit the offences. And yes, that goes back to the root causes of the tech tools, like why the majority of the criminals, they are not studying showing that the criminals are traffickers. They come from the same social economic backgrounds and victims. So some participants ask, okay, how do we address the root causes of trafficking? Because a lot of the time we talk about investigating, identifying. These are reactive and not proactive. These are done when exploitation has already happened or is happening. So we need to go back to the root causes and address how can we effectively prevent human trafficking, then we prevent, then we empower, you know, the vulnerable communities, give them jobs and education. For that, we can prevent both.